A brusque construction weatherization crew is busy spraying insulating foam in the basement of an old New Englander in Hopkinton. Then they head up to the attic, where they blow cellulose insulation into the space. Michael Bruss, who's somewhat of an evangelist for energy efficiency, will tell you that the cheapest megawatt of energy is the one you never have to produce. He says that when done right, this type of work pays for itself.
We can consistently show a 30% reduction in energy costs, taking the construction costs associated specifically with the energy measures. Financing those projects will cash flow positive immediately from day one. And then you obviously work yourself out of that investment, and it's pure gravy after that. And that's without incentives.
The state's utilities offer money back to customers who make their homes and businesses more energy efficient. Customers pay for these incentives on the systems benefits charge part of their bill, and New Hampshire utilities contribute to the fund through the controversial Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, or REGI. And according to ISO New England, which operates the region's electric grid, the New England states are expected to spend $5.7 billion on these subsidies by 2021. But for that money, the region will shave more than 1,400 megawatts off of what its forecasted demand would have been. That's more than the output of a nuclear plant. And it'll save another $260 million in transmission line upgrades. It sounds like a good deal. But PSNH's president Gary Long says utilities aren't sure that this is the best way to allocate energy dollars.
But is it cost effective? And there are some people that will absolutely believe that as a religion. Obviously, it's very cost effective for the one getting the subsidy. Is it cost effective for the ones paying the subsidy?
Long points out, in comparison, Northern Pass is slated to cost about $1 billion and generate 1,200 megawatts. Viewed in this light, $5.7 billion to save 1,400 megawatts isn't so attractive. But when the money that consumers save on buying less energy is factored in, the New Hampshire Public Utilities Commission finds that it costs about 2.1 cents to save a kilowatt hour of energy versus 13 cents it costs generators to produce the same juice. In other words, the PUC finds that once savings are considered, these efficiency programs are a much cheaper way to meet the state's energy needs. But even with all this energy efficiency work, peak energy demand is still forecast to rise over the next 10 years. Add to that the fact that there are 8,600 megawatts of power plants in New England that are more than 30 years old. Many of them are oil-fired power plants, which are costly to run and hardly do anymore, and the ISO expects them to retire in the next decade. You start to see why new power plants are still being proposed and built. So the question is, what kind of new plants are going to replace those old ones? There's a state law that's driving the answer to that question. New Hampshire's renewable portfolio standards require that by 2025, 15% of the state's electricity comes from wind, new biomass plants, or a hodgepodge of other technologies, geothermal, wave or tidal energy, or landfill gas. In terms of which technologies are mature enough for power companies to invest in a big way, perhaps it's useful to look at what the state has built and is building. The state has three wind farms for a total of 171 megawatts, with one more going through the permitting process and a couple of others in development. It has seven biomass plants at 148 megawatts, with two more on the way in Berlin, but that's about all the state's forests can handle. None of the other renewables are being moved forward on the same scale. But even completing this modest amount of renewable energy is not a sure thing. Some of those projects face stiff opposition, as the growing local pushback against wind development in the Newfound Lake region has shown.
The sense is everything is going to get approved, and we are at that point where we should be very afraid.
That's anti-wind activist Lisa Lanoz speaking before a packed auditorium at Newfound High School earlier this month. But Michael Hogan, an analyst with the Regulatory Assistance Project, which helps advise on how to decarbonize the electric grid, says for New England, onshore wind will be just a small piece of the puzzle.
Onshore wind is, we'll look back 20 years from now and it'll seem a little quaint. You know, The good news, it is a region that is rich in offshore wind resources.
Hogan says while that development won't happen in New Hampshire, it will power the state once the technological challenges of offshore wind have been overcome. If that's the case, the region will confront another criticism from wind opponents like Lanoz, that there are costs associated with intermittent renewables. Large numbers of wind turbines need something to back them up.
So in effect, what we have with wind energy is two electric systems that are being built. Other resources have to be in play and available all the time.
According to Willett Kempton, who studies renewables at the University of Delaware, on today's grid, that backup is provided by coal or gas plants. They're paid extra to spin at half power and let the grid's computers bring them up to full power or down even lower as supply from renewables or random spikes in demand fluctuate.
There is some efficiency loss. The owner of the plant is not producing maximum power, so they have to be paid to produce at a lower power level, but it's, you know, fairly small.
Kempton says some lost efficiency is the price to pay for less carbon on the grid, unless or until some sort of storage technology becomes viable. Right now, that amount is negligible. But if the region were getting 30% of its power from wind, the efficiency lost could rise to 15% for those plants. Biomass, and of course traditional plants that burn fuel like natural gas, don't have these same challenges. And the biggest challenge? Nobody believes that wind and biomass alone can fulfill the state's energy demands. There is another source of renewable energy with its own upsides and downsides: large-scale hydro. Tomorrow, we'll take a closer look at whether Canadian hydropower is a good fit for New England. For NHPR News, I'm Sam Evans-Brown.